for Connecticut Public Radio. I'm John Henry Smith. In the wake of a marathon runner from New Britain being struck and killed last week by a teenager driving a stolen vehicle, state lawmakers met yesterday to discuss what to do about car thefts by young people statewide. Republican House Minority Leader Vincent Candelora says the situation is a crisis and unsuccessfully asked for a special session on the issue. Representative Candelora joins me now. First, sir, when you call the juvenile car thefts in Connecticut a crisis, are you basing that on hard data, or is this a reaction to the outcry over that really awful tragedy in New Britain?
Well, I think it's top to bottom. It's sort of a systemic failure right now that we're seeing in our juvenile justice system. Statistically, we are seeing a rise in car thefts in communities, but now we're starting to see the loss of life, whether it be people being hit by these vehicles or accidents occurring and the teenage drivers are being killed, or these vehicles are being used in shootouts, and so people are being shot and killed. You know, all of this has sort of created that crisis, and regardless of the statistics where people want to fight over, we just believe that we need to systemically deal with the fact that a lot of these juveniles have been arrested a number of times and are still committing these crimes.
But when you say you're seeing a rise, is that a rise over 2020? Is that a rise over the last 5 years? Or when you say rise, what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, so apparently in 2019, we did see a decline in car thefts, and now that statistic is on the rise for 2021. But overall, we are seeing an increase in violence and deaths in our cities in particular. So all of this is sort of bringing this to the forefront. You know, originally these issues were brought to us as part of property theft, but now we're starting to see people actually being killed.
Is it an historic rise, do you know?
I'm not sure if it is historic. I don't have the 2021 data yet, but what we are hearing from our local police departments is in some cases it's 300% increases, I think, in the situation of New Britain.
From 2020 to 2021?
I believe 2020 to 2021, correct.
Okay. That stat you talked about from 2019, I heard that stat from Ken Barone of the Institute of Municipal and Regional Policy. He did that study showing car thefts in 2019 were at their lowest levels historically, I mean, since 1985 when they started tabulating the data, and that the uptick in 2020 and 2021, in his estimation, was in keeping with previous normal levels prior to 2019. Is that what you see, or do you have data that contradicts that?
No, I think that data seems to be what people are all relying upon. But what we want to point to, it's not just about the data of car thefts. You know, we have a system where individuals are committing up to 40 crimes in the wake of 3 or 4 years, and they are not being dealt with. Teenagers aren't being evaluated when they are arrested to see if they need services. We don't have DCF evaluation to see how their home lives are, should they be removed from the homes. If we have a 14-year-old that is stealing vehicles, we have an incident where a 14-year-old stabbed and killed somebody in Greenwich, and they cannot be tried as an adult. In the state of Connecticut, if somebody commits first-degree rape, which is forcible sexual assault, they cannot be tried as an adult if they're under the age of 18. And so we need to take a look at all of those things and say, you know what, at times, should we be giving the courts discretion to detain these individuals and to be able to try them as adults? And in Connecticut, we can't do that right now.
You know, I heard you say something yesterday. I didn't actually hear it. I heard of it, and I saw it quoted, where you said, in regards to the police accountability law, once the law was passed, we've made no attempt to evaluate the impacts of those laws, so our police officers don't have the ability to necessarily do their job. Which made me think, is this focus on the juvenile theft issue, is that a way for the GOP to revisit or even relitigate some aspects of the year-old police accountability law?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, that comment's in response to what we're hearing from our police officers is that they are unable to pursue vehicles. So when these cars are being stolen, a lot of times they're teenagers that don't even have a driver's license. and haven't been properly tested. And so it could lead to somebody being killed because they don't even know the rules of the road. The police officers are unable to pursue those vehicles because of our police accountability laws. So one of the things that we've asked for in our Democrat colleagues in our meeting yesterday is to sit down and look at those rules of engagement and should they be changed in order to allow for a police officer to chase those individuals. And the heightened impact of the fact that now that police officers can be personally sued, they're less inclined to make a judgment call and go outside the letter of the law to protect public safety. And so does it make sense that we allow them to be sued anyway? So should we also, though, be giving them discretion now to be able to pursue those vehicles? So that's part of the conversation I think we need to have.
So the pursuit issue and the qualified immunity issue, those are the two parts of the police accountability law that you would like to address in a special session.
Well, I think more so the pursuit issue, I think is the most important piece right now from a public state safety standpoint. So we've asked for that specifically to be looked at.
Do you see the special session you've asked for as completely dead? And if so, how will the GOP proceed with this fight against juvenile car thefts going forward?
Well, I thought we had a good meeting yesterday with House Democrats, and then, soon after that bipartisan meeting, the Senate Democrats came out very strongly condemning us and trying to tie us to the insurrection that occurred on January 6th. So I think partisan politics, unfortunately, is creeping into this issue, and I'm not so optimistic that we're going to see meaningful reform, but we would like to see that happen.
Are you sympathetic to Majority Leader Ritter's stated desire to attack this problem, and I'm using his words, with a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer? He wants to tweak current laws, like allowing judges to access certain information on arrestees outside of office hours. It would allow them to identify repeat offenders. What is your thoughts on his thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally we went through about 9 different points that we would like to see addressed. I don't think anyone here is talking about, as the Senate suggested, reverting to 1980 laws and throwing everybody in jail. I think there's a recognition that there's a better way to do things, and there needs to be balance. And so we're looking for that balance to be brought back. I thought our conversation was good, but I am concerned that we aren't going to be able to strike that balance and see meaningful reform. But overall, I do agree with Speaker Ritter and his comments of taking a look at these issues and solving the problems that we're seeing. It's just a matter of whether or not we have the fortitude in this building to do it.
House Republicans have suggested allowing a court to label a young person as a risk to public safety more quickly and allowing police to chase more stolen cars, as you've expertly pointed out, as well as keeping young people in juvenile detention longer without a court order, are proposals that could solve this problem. Well, now, those proposals seem to focus on the car theft problem, in my estimation, as a nail that needs a hammer. Is there, in your view, any enthusiasm amongst the GOP to say, wait a minute, maybe this thing that I want to hammer isn't a nail, it's actually a screw that might require a little hammering, but also requires an alternative tool, like a screwdriver? And my example of the screwdriver here might be policies that support keeping kids from getting to the point of criminality in their lives by removing barriers to poor families getting into good neighborhoods with good school districts and supporting youth development programs, for example.
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's something we talked about yesterday as well. There is a lot of COVID money that came into districts, and I think we've seen the Fatherhood Initiative be put into place. And I think those things are important for the individuals. Our caucus has also pushed for the ability for school choice, allowing individuals to make decisions on which schools they want to go to. And we strongly support that program. I mean, currently the state of Connecticut has an open choice program that my district participates in, where children from the cities essentially can take courses and enroll in schools in the suburbs. And I think those programs are important to give people those opportunities in the same way that suburban kids could go into the cities for magnet school opportunities. So we definitely support that front end. And I think we need to continue that dialogue, as well as looking at the back end. If a child gets into trouble, we need to tackle it quickly to prevent the recidivism. And what's happened with the way that our laws are right now, for a child over the course of 3 years to commit, you know, 17 or 18 crimes on average over the course of those 3 years, we're training them sort of to be adult criminals as opposed to trying to nip it in the bud. And so one of the conversations we had yesterday as well is to look at it, evaluating the children when they are being adjudicated, to make sure that there are proper services that they can receive, whether it be mental health or drug treatment, or just family support services, to get them out of that vicious cycle.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think that, you know, when you were a kid and I was a kid, we both saw Trading Places, right? You take a person from one circumstance and then you put him in another circumstance and see how he does, right? So.
Well, that's right. And kids make really dumb decisions. I have teenagers right now, and I'm astounded at some of the decision making.
You and me both.
And it is a process that we need to get in front of, and the state needs to be providing services to them. And I think, especially what we're finding out in the court systems and through the adjudication process, we've really kind of turned our backs on them as opposed to providing those services up front that they need.
You said on Gary Byron's show recently that you felt state Democrats, quote, won't be happy until everyone's net income is around $35,000 a year. Seems to be the goal of let's bring everybody down to equal footing with each other, as opposed to allowing a free market where people are rewarded for working hard, unquote. I want to ask you, Representative Candelore, do you really believe that families, say, who haven't been able to get into good neighborhoods and with good schools for generations because of redlining and restrictive zoning laws are there and are poor and are because they're not working hard?
I think those comments are in the context of our tax structure. And what we heard this last session, we had a budget with a lot of federal revenue coming in. We didn't need to raise taxes, yet Democrats were calling for over $6 billion of new taxes that included more income taxes and actually a consumption tax on top of a gasoline tax. And so what I was saying is rather than having those taxation levels where we're lowering people's income and redistributing wealth, we should be leaving that alone if we don't need to raise taxes. Certainly individuals that are living in poverty, we need to lift them out and provide programs for them and provide opportunities for good jobs. And so we could certainly have a lot of conversations about how to do that. But one of my concerns is what we're seeing is with the Democrats' initiatives, they're divesting from our cities. I mean, essentially what they're saying is move everybody out into the suburbs, whereas, you know, there is a vibrant cities that we need to be developing. And I think that it's important to stay on message. And one of those areas that we could do is public safety. Just as many people that are living in the cities are frightened and scared about the amount of violence that we are seeing. And we need to tackle that issue so that individuals that want to live in cities can still continue to live in cities, regardless of their income.
The Kaiser Family Foundation, they've compiled and analyzed data across 2,400 or so American counties, and it finds that the vaccination rates in these counties that voted for President Trump in 2020 are around 35%, whereas Biden counties are right now at 46.7. Dr. Fauci over the weekend said that over 99% of COVID deaths nationwide are among the unvaccinated. How do you talk with your Republican constituents about this, with the understanding that I know you probably have to walk something of a tightrope in having those conversations?
Yeah, you know, it is about, you know, people's decision makings. And what I have to say for the state of Connecticut, at least, is we don't, those statistics don't bear out. And so many of our Republican communities are reaching their thresholds of vaccination rates. In my district, which actually went for Trump, we are well over the 70% vaccination rate that is needed. But what we're seeing in Connecticut is a problem in our cities. I think the city of New Haven needs 25,000 more residents to become vaccinated in order to make their threshold of 70%. So I think what's important in the discussions is not politicizing the vaccine issue, but getting into the communities, finding out where the hesitancy is, and having conversations about that, and showing them the risk and reward in order to get vaccinated. So I don't like to go down that thread of whether it's a Biden district or a Trump district, because I think in the state of Connecticut, that type of analysis isn't bearing out.
And final question, once again, going back to what you hope to accomplish going forward in the next few months with regards to these juvenile car thefts, what would be a win for you and for your Republican colleagues?
Well, we have about 9 points that we want to take a look at and address, and some we already discussed, but a couple of additional ones is, when we talked about the detention, right now individuals are only allowed to be detained for 6 hours and then they're released. We want to allow the police department to have the ability to get an extension of those 6 hours if they can't find a parent to release them to, or if there is a proven threat, that they could go to a court and say, you know, we need to hold this person a little bit longer. The other areas I think we need to look at is the actual detention. Some of these juveniles are being put into DCF group homes for detainment as opposed to our centers that are in Hartford and Bridgeport. And there's just really a lack of understanding of why that's occurring, because those homes are not necessarily equipped or set up for detention of juvenile criminals or juveniles that are being charged with crimes. Those are for children that might be in a difficult home environment. And so commingling these individuals might not be the best thing. And we saw that bear out in Willcott, where the individuals had vandalized the Willcott Center, Senior Center, and were in one of those homes. And so we're trying to understand why that's occurring. And so I think those are some other areas we have to look at.
All right. Connecticut House Minority Leader Vincent Candelora, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you very much.